You are listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 10.
Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell.
Today's episode is supported by The Wool Room. The Wool Room is dedicated to delivering you a better night's sleep. At thewoolroom.com, you can choose from a wide range of mattresses, mattress protectors, bedding and beds filled with British wool, ensuring that you stay cool and comfortable at night. Find out how wool can improve your sleep by visiting thewoolroom.com and claim your 10% discount with the promo code WOOLACADEMY. That is the promo code WOOLACADEMY written all in one word. Today's episode is one of a two-part series. When I talked to Rob Langtree, he shared so much valuable knowledge that it was enough for two episodes. So in episode 9 and episode 10, Rob Langtree shares his insights about communications and wool. This episode is the second part of the interview. So if you have not yet listened to part 1 in episode number 9, may I suggest that you listen to that first before continuing with this episode number 10. Apologies for the audio quality, as the audio connection between Germany and Australia wasn't the best during the time of recording. In case you missed something in this episode, there is a full transcript of the interview available for you to download when you visit the show notes on elizabethvandelden.com/010. And now enjoy the second part of the interview with Rob Langtree. Today on the show, we have Rob Langtree, and since my background is in communications, Rob has always been one of my personal superheroes of the wool industry. I had the pleasure of meeting Rob during my time at IWTO when he worked for 7 years as the Global Chief Strategy and Marketing Officer at the Australian Wool Innovation and Woolmark Company. What always amazed me is how much value Rob contributed to the wool industry through his strategic marketing campaigns. There are a few of his campaigns I want to mention in particular, where Rob showed great leadership in making these campaigns a success. These include the Woolmark Prize, the Campaign for Wool, which we talked about many times already on the show, and he and his team also launched Wool Week in 10 major retail markets successfully. Today, Rob has his own brand and communications consulting business under the name Consultus Council. So we've established all what, you know, the different steps that people can take to tackle communications. But then there's another issue that wool industry members face, and that is that they are often small to medium-sized companies, and often they don't have a dedicated person responsible for communications. It quite is then just part of someone's job role who's typically not skilled to do communications. What do you think is the danger with such a setup, and how would you recommend that people do have either people really responsible for that or get help from outside?
Well, I think it's you know, different things for different size companies. What I would say is that the responsibility for marketing a product, and by marketing I use that in its broader sense, which is basically sales and business development, that responsibility rests with the chief executive officer, and doing it effectively rests at the top of the company. In saying that, a lot of CEOs don't have time necessarily to craft advertising copy. So there was two sources I would suggest. If you don't have the financial resources to employ someone who's a dedicated marketer, then I think using your staff and using the broadest range of your staff to contribute to the communications process is a very good way to shorthand that and to get engagement. Again, thinking through the plan may or may not be something that you can do internally, but then executing it, don't overlook the fact that many of your staff are active communicators across a broad range of people. Of course, you can use external resources, and marketing agencies and promotional agencies exist in every one of the key markets that both growers and processors and retailers work. And there are different types of agencies that you can engage. The simplest approach is to employ a graphic design company to do the basic design and develop your key brand assets, but then to use those internally, either through your management team or your staff, as a way of getting those out to the market. For a, I guess, a scale up in terms of the resources that you want, then promotional agencies, advertising and marketing services agencies are all there. You don't necessarily need to go to the best in the business or the biggest in the business. And many of those companies that used to be very expensive on a retainer basis now will look at projects if your brand is something that they see as being something particularly relevant or interesting to them. So you can use an internal resource or an internal model, an external resource or model, be it a marketing services or a communications agency, or a combination of those. What I think is really important is to understand that that brand that you own, that company identity and resource that you own, is a very powerful thing. And it's also where a lot of the investment you make, be it internal or external, large or small, that value accrues to a brand. And you need to manage that brand as if it's one of the key assets of the business. It's not a case of now looking at a business and saying its only assets are the physical machinery that produce a product. The intellectual property that attaches to a brand is equally as valuable on the books, if you like, as is the physical capital equipment. So don't underrate the resource that is relevant to apply to building and maintaining that sort of key intellectual asset, if you like.
And just to then continue with this thought, so if companies decide to invest into strategic communications, what do you think would be the benefits that they can expect from this kind of investment?
Well, I think from what I said before, where in the past the industry's primarily looked itself as a commodity producer and processor, I think the first benefit is that, and we've proven this with the AWI campaigns, is that investing in marketing and in building communications connections with consumers, B2B or B2C, stronger pricing and better margins tend to be the most measurable result. It will depend on how much intensity there is as to how quickly you get a price return or a stronger margin out of that. But bottom line is that you can't expect to get higher prices and margins if you don't increase demand. And whether that's demand from the supply chain or demand from the end consumer, demand is the key to building price and to building margin. The other thing I would say is that greater engagement with the company and its brand usually means that you get stronger levels of loyalty. If you're open your wool spinning business to an audience that increasingly is looking at where their end product comes from, and you have an active dialogue with that audience, when they next go to buy a suit in Savile Row or in downtown Milan or in Frankfurt, they may well think about the fibre and the if you like, the yarn or the fabric as much as they think of the brand. That means that they're increasingly loyal to your brand, and every repeat purchase is a lower cost per sale. So, in fact, what you're doing is, by creating a relationship through communication, is you're ultimately lowering your cost of sales because you're going to get better repeat purchase from an engaged consumer who knows and you know, has a preference for your brand. Ultimately, if you go back to where we started and you talk about how you define an audience and how you define a target market, if you believe that your employees are a key asset, and if you believe, and I'm sure you would, that shareholders and all of those stakeholders in part are very rational about how they look at your business, but in part it's a bit of an emotional decision, do they trust and want to invest in your brand, then I think having a cohesive communication strategy and executing that well leads to stronger shareholder value and stronger stakeholder equity in your company, because their emotional trust that you can continue to build business and do it profitably will be a positive outcome of them seeing your brand communicating very consistently with its audiences and indeed with them.
Yeah, and one of the things that I learned in university that, you know, sometimes you have these sentences that stick with you somehow, and that was that you cannot not communicate, which means that even if you don't put any form of communications out there, you're still delivering a message, but that message is probably something you don't want people to
hear about you. So the other day I was going to a website of a weaver, and it was really almost non-existing, very, very basic, and didn't give me any information. So the impression that I had of this weaver is that they were like maybe not trustworthy or not professional, although probably their products is of very high quality, but what they were communicating didn't come across as that at all. So that's something that how I always remind myself that you want to make sure that you deliver the key messages that you want people to hear and not what they might then start to assume if you don't proactively engage with your stakeholders.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. If you can't be a part of the communication or the conversation, then you really can't hope to control exceptions. Exactly as you say, you need to be an active participant in the conversation, whether the person you're talking to is further up the supply chain or down, or whether it's an end consumer.
Yeah, and one we earlier we briefly touched also on social media, and I find that especially in a manufacturing industry such as the wool industry, companies do struggle a little bit asking themselves, okay, what is my role in social media? And maybe because you have a lot of experience using social media for the wool industry, what would be your recommendation? How should companies address social media?
Someone once said to me that whether you're a chief executive or a taxi driver, you all consume media as a consumer. You know, everyone consumes media in a professional but also in a personal case. And I think you have to think of social media as being very pervasive these days. Whether you're 16 or 60, usually people are engaging with, you know, certainly with a very broad social media like Facebook, like Twitter, in a professional sense, like LinkedIn. Even in China, looking at WeChat and looking at a number of those social media, they have massive levels of engagement. And while people might engage with them initially on a very personal or private basis, that means that your audience, which is a professional audience, is engaging in social media. So you have to think of social media as being pretty pervasive across all of those, you know, key communications targets that you might want to identify. How do you start? Well, the first thing I think is you start with understanding very clearly who your stakeholders are and where they live and what they do on a day-to-day basis. It might be that if you have limited resources, you focus on those that are more commercially available, for example, with LinkedIn. But in most cases, if you understand who the stakeholders are, you can get to understand what social media are more likely to be used by them. In terms of explaining what you make and the content and how you do that, I think IWTL in particular has done a very good job of explaining the role and the growth and interest in corporate social responsibility. And I think all of the suppliers or all the components of the supply chain, all the participants in the supply chain now understand fairly clearly that wool has a story to tell in that area. It may well be that talking about your part of that within the area that you manufacture, for example, a spinner, and talking about that with LinkedIn and with the social media contacts of your employees and your key accounts and your staff, that might be the right way to start. What I would say is that social media is not a panacea for a total communications program. The more we learn about interaction with social media, the more we understand that it is primarily a peer-to-peer medium. So it's me talking to you, not necessarily talking to people that I don't know or I don't trust. And in that sense, referrals from your own staff, from, for example, a celebrity that uses your product, from someone who is a designer that has, you know, unique connections with other designers in fashion, those sorts of areas are the place to start. Once you get to a level of presence in a social medium, that's probably the first stage in it. If you're looking at a broader communication strategy, which requires you or where you want to engage in building your brand with end consumers, then you do need to look at things like cost effectiveness, at measuring the conversion of understanding to purchase. And a lot of that data is available. And it's actually available on very simple searches in the internet. Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn all have publicly available data on who looks at what content, where and how. And I think, you know, just simply being sensible about looking at how different people use social media can help you define how to do it. I go back to that core though. I think your staff, your management, even those people that you sell to and sell through, those are people who are primarily your targets, and they are all not only commercial people, but they're social people as well. And if you see them as that, then perhaps that's the first way to start thinking through how you use social media.
Yeah, and also I think there's just huge opportunities that companies shouldn't miss out on. And I'm just thinking of LinkedIn. Sometimes if you search for certain wool companies on LinkedIn, they didn't yet take the time to just fill in the basics about their company, which is, I think, just a loss of opportunity that is so easy to take. And especially young people who might be looking for a job, they might look on LinkedIn to find out more about your company. So that would be an area, I think, where companies can quite easily make use of social media platforms that are out there.
I couldn't agree more. I think that, you know, that's a great idea, and I think, you know, LinkedIn is a very good medium to do that. There are probably also regional media, depending on where you sit. I know that there are similar opportunities within the Chinese market, for example, and Japanese market. So, yeah, I agree. LinkedIn, I think, it's a low-cost, relatively straightforward process to build that as an asset and as a medium. And why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah, exactly. And again, it comes down to you cannot not communicate, because if there's nothing to be found, what does that say about your company again? But then going back to social media in general, and you, I think you mentioned it earlier, that social media is very content hungry. And you have a lot of experience of producing social media campaigns. What kind of secrets do you have to share with us if we would want to create our own social media content?
I don't think there's secrets, but you know, firstly, you need to remember that social media has not been around that long. I can't remember the actual date, but it's less than a decade. So most other media, people understand through continuous research how it works and what engages, I guess, consumers most or media audiences most clearly. Social media is still a bit of a learning process. The things that I think we learned in AWI was that the first thing is relevance. You need to be relevant to the audience. So when you think through creating a piece of social content, for example, a piece of video, then make sure you understand who you expect to look at that and what they want to get out of it. It's very easy to say, oh, we're on the fashion business, but if you're not part of fashion design, then the people that should be talking about fashion are those that are recognised as being experts in that field. If you are an expert in wool growing, then that's obviously something that you can talk about. And that leads to the second thing. Authenticity is key. What I think the consumers of social media have learnt as they have grown up with it is that it's very easy to tell who's genuine, who's authentic, and who's simply pushing a sales message. And because it's a peer-to-peer medium, you have to be very careful that what you say and how you say it is authentic. It is the truth of you, as opposed to just a sales message that's been overly crafted. Because the difference between social media and traditional media is that when people discover that you're perhaps just trying to sell them something that maybe doesn't have a level of integrity they expect, they will crucify you in that medium itself, and they'll do it in real time. So relevance, authenticity. We've talked about engaging content, and increasingly, I think, because consumer expectations grow over time, that content should probably focus on video content. The other reason why video is important is because it's emotionally more engaging. It's a three-dimensional storytelling medium as opposed to flat. And then the final thing I would say is think carefully about the specific social media that you're using. Some are more amenable to slightly longer, for example, video content, and some are very short. If you use Vine, Vine has very high penetration in younger audience groups, but in very short lengths of video. Whereas if YouTube, then you can run 5, 7, you know, not 10, 12 minutes. So with the same shoot that you do initially, or the same investment you make in production, make sure that it's able to be customized so the length and the quality can be the most relevant to the particular social medium that you jump into.
Yeah, and as you said also earlier, that the wool industry has so many wonderful stories to tell. And I think compared to other fibers, we are so lucky that we have so many parts of our industry are so, lend themselves so well to tell stories. So we have these beautiful sheep and such a great variety of sheep around the world. We have farmers who do so many great things for the environment and for the sheep. And then obviously the supply chain, the processing is very unique and lots of attention to detail. And then obviously we also have these beautiful products that are made out of wool. So there are so many opportunities to tell these beautiful stories. So I think, I hope we inspired the wool industry some more to start telling those stories.
I think one of the interesting words that you hear more frequently now is this concept of an artisan, of someone who draws on heritage and history, learns a craft or a trade or an ability to do something, and then continues to do that even if they have to do it in a more modern context. And for me, why I became so deeply involved in the wool industry, and to be honest, I was used to, you know, on Monday it's Coca-Cola and on Thursday it's soft drink and on Friday it's L'Oreal. One of the reasons why I got very involved in the wool industry was understanding just how artisanal the skills and the investment is in producing goods out of wool. It's such an incredibly rich source of stories right the way through the supply chain. I mean, I worry that spinners think they don't have anything to say. And then I walk through some of the factories in Biella and I look at how they blend product dyes and how they make sure that the dyes don't run in final production, or they'll do a short run of a particular customized colour. They're things that consumers these days want to know. They're artisanal skills that go to making differentiated end product. And I think that's a really valuable thing that sometimes people through the supply chain don't recognise they have as an asset. So for me, I'd be encouraging at every step along that supply chain people to look at what they do and look at it from a point of view as, what do I do differently than, for example, backing a very large crude oil ship into a refinery and pumping out plastic fibre at the other end? I mean, that's not a great story to be able to tell. It doesn't have anywhere near the depth of running from Tasmania and the growing of merino sheep to blending a specific dye in Biella to weaving it in the north of England and producing a Savile Row suit.
Yeah, and I guess often when we are an expert in something, we don't maybe realize or appreciate that we have such a specific knowledge that people are interested in. So I like what you shared. Thank you so much. Well, thank you for this very interesting discussion that we had today. I personally also learned a lot. And before we round things up, where can people get in contact with you?
Look, it's best, you know, they can go through you, Elizabeth. or they can find me on just my name, Rob Langtree, at me.com is the easy way. I'm based in Sydney. I'm travelling a bit, but I'm always accessible on email. Get in touch anytime. One of the things that I really think is of interest, and for me it's a personal thing rather than a commercial thing, is if I can be of any help to anyone in the supply chain that can help guarantee a growth or a continuation of the demand for Australia's merino wool, that's a very valuable thing to me as an Australian. And hopefully, if anyone wants to tap into that knowledge, I'm more than welcome to share it.
Wonderful, thank you. And we'll also link to your website consultus.sydney. I love that you have the ending Sydney in your website. That is very cool. Great. Well, thank you once again for your time, and we'll make sure we link to everything we discussed in the show notes, and I hope you have a great evening now. While it's still morning here in Germany, you are now ready to have your happy hour, I guess.
Yes, happy hour and dinner time. Great. It's great to talk to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Rob Langtree. There is a full transcript available of this interview, and you can access the transcript by going to the show notes at elizabethvandelden.com/010. Visit elizabethvandelden.com/010. Wool Academy is going on a short break during the Christmas holidays. We will be back in the beginning of January 2017. And while you are also enjoying the holiday season, spread the word by telling your friends and family about us so that more people can listen to the beautiful stories Wool has to tell. Thank you for listening, and bye-bye for now.